Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Joe Crookston. Crookston is a singer-songwriter and a musician. He has worked as a facilitator and organizer in hundreds of retreats, camps, schools, and detention centers throughout the United States. His latest release, Fall Down as the Rain, was featured on NPR's All Songs Considered. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks, Tish. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. You know, I want to talk to you. In your biography, you described growing up with a crazy songwriter for a mother.
we're just diving right in.
Yes, we are. Tell me about that influence.
Oh, crazy. Boy, you know, now a little bit of background. I grew up in a Catholic household with a mother. I had this sense that every bird that flew into our backyard was this divine gift from God. And and she would come into the living room holding a golden rosary and say, "Look, I dipped it in holy water and it turned from blue to gold," you know, this kind of thing. And I realized as I grew up and got older that my mom had some delusions about these. Her Catholicism took her into a place of delusion, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she... boy, we're really just diving right in. This is great. I like
but
this.
You know what? She was also a songwriter, correct?
Yes.
So she was diving into other things as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. So what she did with a couple hours a day, she would close the door to the living room, and she would go in there with her D18 Martin guitar, and she would write songs. And every day, there were 2 hours a day where you couldn't interrupt her, you couldn't talk to her, unless the house was burning down or something like that. So this was her time away where she was writing. And most days, she would emerge with a new song that she had written. And I can't say that they were great songs, but they were her attempt at capturing the divine in through music, this kind of thing. So
they were religious songs, not
I would say
wasn't
yeah
a folk genre,
yes,
show tunes, or
exactly. No, these were hardcore religious songs,
yeah,
and gospel-y, and not songs that I feel inclined to ever sing myself because I that's not my orientation. I get, you know, one thing I'd say about my mom is I wasn't inspired by her songs per se. But I was inspired by her dedication to creativity, and she valued it so much that that's what she instilled in me. Mm-hmm. Is like, oh, my son's a folk singer. Yay, you know, there aren't any parents out there saying, good, my son's a folk singer.
Yeah, well, when did you actually pick up a guitar and start in some ways emulating her?
Yeah, that's a good question. Freshman year in high school, I sat down in math class, and my buddy Don Bedell was sitting next to me. And he had a songbook of The Who's greatest hits, and he was trying to learn how to play My Generation, you know, My Generation,
yes,
by The Who.
Uh-huh.
And it has three chords in it, the G, C, and a D chord, this kind of thing. And I was looking at the chords, and I was like, recognize that these are the same chords that my mom's playing in her crazy songs. Do you see what I'm saying? Or these are the same three chords, basically, that she's using.
Uh-huh.
And right then and there, it was kind of this bridge was made between what was, the Who is cool, you know, and they're doing cool stuff, and my mom is a dork, you know, you know what I mean? And at that point, my mom became kind of cool. Oh, she's playing the same chords. So at that point, I went home, and I said, Mom, I want to play guitar. And she had an old dusty black guitar behind her bed that she never used anymore, and she pulled it out and tuned it up, and she showed me how to play E minor, and I strummed my first E minor, and that was it. I started, and I never put the guitar down. So that was freshman year in high school.
That's a great story.
You know, how old was I? 14. How old are you? Yeah, something.
Well, when did you start actually writing your own stuff? Do you remember that?
Let me think about that. I wrote right from the beginning. I dabbled, but it wasn't until later, maybe my junior senior year in high school, that I started really writing. Yeah, that's when I just dabbled in writing. I have a story about beginning to write more seriously. I can tell you a little bit later if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But when you were dabbling, were you dabbling in some kind of genre? Was it folk or was it rock?
It wasn't.
Do you remember?
Folk. It was rock. It was Neil Young. It was Bob Dylan. I became obsessed with all these three chord songs that my mom was playing the three chord G C D, maybe an E minor in there. So you know, I started scouring all like Neil Young songbooks and Bob Dylan, and I became pretty obsessed with Bob Dylan and you know his whole journey and. Recently watched the No Direction Home, the PBS special.
That was wonderful.
It was great to see that.
I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
His writing was absolutely amazing.
And as a songwriter, I'm a songwriter. I do a lot of traditional music as well. I play the banjo and fiddle. But as a singer-songwriter who was writing new songs, that was a brand new revolutionary thing to do for him. And so I really was inspired by him for sure. Do you want me to tell you when I first started writing, or do you?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. And then I'm going to ask you to sing something for us. Tell me about it. Yeah.
I will tell you that. I went to college, and I loved playing guitar. I was studying classical guitar at the end of my high school senior year. And I went into college as a classical performance guitar major because I knew I loved the guitar. I knew I loved music. I didn't know exactly what the outlet was going to be. So I was studying classical guitar. George Bachman was my teacher, and he would, you know, I sat properly and I played the right way, you know, all this, which was great. And it definitely it still sticks with me in my playing. And then 1987, my friend Carol came up to me and said, hey, Joe, do you want to go to the Kent State Folk Festival? I went to Kent State University. That's where I went to school, college. And I said, what's a folk festival, you know? And so basically she said, well, it's a, you know, music happening. There's dancers, there's fiddlers, there's musicians that play all weekend. It's $5 to get in for the whole weekend. I said, sure, let's go. So I went to the concert, and the main stage show was a guy named John McCutcheon. The Horseflies from Ithaca were there, who I'd never heard of before. And this was 1987. A performer, Harvey Reed, and some others, Joel Mabus, different people that I that played that on the main stage. And basically, by the end of that night, I was completely transformed. Oh, my God, this is what I want to do with my life. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you decided to totally give up classical? Or?
Yeah, I would think. At that point, I did. I had an electric guitar and a classical. I sold my electric guitar and bought a steel string and then really started writing. So the idea of standing on stage in front of, you know, 500 people and singing songs that had a social context that weren't classical music just for the sake of music, weren't hip and cool and sexy, you know, necessarily, but really had a social context to it. That's what really grabbed me. And there was something instantly in that moment, that's what I want to do. So I basically started writing songs at that point.
How lucky for you to have found that.
Yeah.
And to have it click so enormously.
It was.
You know, like an explosion.
It was. It definitely was. And
But I want you to sing something for us. Would you do that?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is the title cut from my newest CD. It's called Fall Down Is the Rain. And I wrote this on a backpacking trip in the Okanagan Forest. And it's about 20 miles south of Canada in Washington State in the Northwest. So I had my little travel banjo with me, and I sat on a rock and I wrote this song. It's called Fall Down Is the Rain.
I'm gonna leave this big old world and the trouble and the pain. And if I get to heaven, I will not stay. I'll turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. Fall down as the rain, fall down as the rain. I'll turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. I finally reach the ground, I'll soak into the side. I'll turn myself around again, come up as goldenrod. Come up as goldenrod, come up as goldenrod. I'll turn myself around again, come up as goldenrod. Thank you. I turn dry and brown, I'll lay me down to rest. I'll turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. Part of an eagle's nest, part of an eagle's nest. I'll turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. Part of an eagle's nest, part of an eagle's nest. Turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. When that eagle learns to fly, I'll flutter from that tree. I'll turn myself around again as part of the mystery. Part of the mystery, part of the mystery. I'll turn myself around again as part of the mystery. Part of the mystery, part of the mystery. Turn myself around again as part of the mystery. When my life is over and I've gone away, I'm gonna leave this big old world and the trouble and the pain. And if I get to heaven, I will not stay. I'll turn myself around again and fall down as the rain.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Wonderful song. When you write a song, does it all come at once, or do you polish like so many poets and writers do?
I polish and polish most of the time. That song came out, lyrically came out exactly like I sing it right now.
Hmm.
Yeah, which is very unusual for me, and I think that might be part of the reason why I love it so much, is it simply came out. I knew exactly what I wanted to say. And that cycle of life, the goldenrod coming up, uh-huh. dying and becoming a piece of an eagle's nest, and then the mystery. It just followed and came out.
Mm-hmm. And you can feel that you were out in nature probably when
you were
writing this. Yeah,
yeah,
you said you were. And I could feel that in the song, even before you had mentioned that.
Because
I was thinking, if he wasn't sitting there, he must have been imagining it.
Yeah.
Sometime when he had been.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I want to talk to you also about your work as a facilitator and as a teacher at camps and schools. So talk to us about that. Well, what exactly do you do?
What do I do? I do many things in my life. I give guitar lessons, private instruction, guitar lessons over the years. I've done that a lot with adults and children. I've done a lot of work at schools, artist residencies. And particularly one project that I finished recently was at the King County Juvenile Detention Center in Seattle.
Hmm.
And what I did there was, for a year and a half, I did writing, creative writing, poetry, raps, slam poetry, songs. And I would sit down with detained youth who were between the age of like 15 and 21 and basically craft, what is your life story? Who are you? Why are you here? Why are you locked up behind bars? What are you pissed off about?
Mm-hmm,
that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get these writings at first that were just, I'm not sure I can say these things on the air.
Probably pure anger, right?
Yes, just pure anger in a very trite, not very interesting form. So all the words that the FCC won't allow me to say, they're all in there. And I would go back to them and I would say, it's clear to me that you're angry by what you've written here. Now why? Tell me why. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so to plumb, I guess I'm using that word plumb, just I'm kind of this archaeologist, in a sense, to say, now who are you? So what I would do with them is get them to write personal stories, and then we would craft them into a rap or into a poem or a song. And, you know, I really gave them the liberty to do what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then I would bring in digital recording equipment into a jail cell that was about 6 by 6 feet, and we would set it up, set up microphones, and they would, with keyboards and with microphones and beatbox machines, basically record what they'd written and put, you know, put music and lyrics to it, and here's your creation. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a year and a half, and it was a very challenging. I mean, challenging just to get the digital equipment in the door through the security down into the jail cell was a huge feat.
But did you see these kids transform by actually having to stop and think about the why of the anger?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say absolutely. That's not a question. There were times when it didn't happen. Mm. There were times when it failed miserably. You know, just quite honestly, that it would just not work. And then there were these moments, many moments, where this girl comes up to the microphone for the first time ever, and I've never spoken into a microphone, and I'm dumb, and I don't know what I'm doing, and but you can do it. And then having this ring of 7 or 8 other inmates, I guess you'd call them, going, go, 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 you can do it. This, all of a sudden, the room is transformed into this place of empowerment, mm-hmm. personal empowerment.
And validation.
And validation. So she gets up to the mic and she goes, and she has a beautiful voice and she's singing some, I can't remember what the words are or anything right now, but those moments of like, wow, she'll never forget that. And then she came back for more and did another one, you know, see what I mean?
That's great.
So to me, that is
an
example.
That is very empowering. Yeah,
absolutely. And there was one, just one more is one image I have in this, 18-year-old boy stood on a table, which the security guards were a little bit uptight about. He was standing by himself up on a table, on a lunch table, in this, it's a hall, it's like a, you know, and he sang Amazing Grace from the top of his lungs, and he has this incredible voice, and the whole room just erupted, wah, you know, and it was like these moments of like, here we are locked up, you know, locked up, and yet he's singing Amazing Grace, and the security guards are peeking through the window and like, what the heck's going on, you know, what's going on in there, you know.
That's
so
great.
It was
it wasn't
always like that. Uh-huh. You know, there were days.
But just those moments are probably worth a million.
Yeah.
Huh. You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guest is Joe Crookston. We were going to talk about the fact that you have said that you think music is community building. To talk to me more about that.
Oh, well, for me, I've never – it was kind of going back to the story about the folk festival that – watching these artists on stage bring a group of, you know, that night there might have been 2,000 people in the audience, and bringing them together, it was not about necessarily how one artist could stand up there and shake their body, you know, and shake it and make everybody impress them necessarily, but it was about how can I as a performer make this a we experience, that kind of thing. And it's not something I guess I learned as much as just it feels right to me to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in us doing something together, mm-hmm. and just like at the juvenile detention center, us having an experience together than me impressing you. Mm-hmm. And that's just my orientation.
And standing apart, right? I mean,
and standing apart as, I think it really to me ties into this idea in our culture of passivity. The idea that to be creative, the assumption that you need to be on a big stage in front of thousands of people. Those are the artists, and everybody else who comes to watch are the mere mortals who are not creative.
Exactly.
And I would say that's part of it for me is really equalizing that and having art and creativity not be such a passive where you're observing the media presenting it, but you are a participant in it.
And you also mentioned in the biography that you sent me that a lot of people think that if you're not on the stage or on the silver screen, that you're probably not good. It means you're not making it, right?
Exactly.
As an artist.
Right. I mean, take Ithaca.
The only validation would be to get on the giantest stage you can think of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that is part of our culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
We worship that kind of fame.
Yeah. 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 And I'd say just it's exactly what you just said. And I think that the idea of I guess the word equalizing or I think Ithaca is a great example of a town for me that there's a lot of activity and involvement in people's creativity and entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people going out to a jam or a sing or a theater, or, you know, where I feel like the public is more involved in their entertainment than in many cities that I've lived
in. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of creative energy. And it's back and forth, and it's a circle. It really it really is amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I want you to sing me something new.
Something new?
Yes.
Okay. This is the newest song I've written, and it's called Superman. And I became a dad 2 years ago.
Hmm.
And although I'm not necessarily writing songs about diapers, the idea of becoming a dad has certainly gotten into my songwriting and the relationship between father and daughter and that. So this is a song called Superman, and it also, to me, it explores class difference in our culture. So here it is.
On the 22nd floor, on this scaffold hanging high, I get paid to wash these windows and squeegee them dry. My name is Juan, no, I'm not afraid of heights. And yeah, when I'm at the window, sometimes I look inside. Sometimes I look inside. And I've been up and down this building with my bucket and my pole. Through the glass I watch the upper class looking back at me. They are looking back at me. They're looking back at me. And they marvel at me dangling, and I marvel at their wealth. And sometimes I wish that I was them instead of out here by myself. Sometimes I wish I was them. Sometimes I wish I was them. And I imagine all the money and the power and prestige. I'd be sharply dressed behind my desk with everything I need. I'd have everything I need. I'd have everything. Living here in San Diego with Marie, my little girl, with her big brown eyes, her moppy little curls. She thinks that I am Superman and that I know how to fly. And it's good to be Superman in her eyes. It's good to be Superman. It's good to be Superman. A navy blue banker in his office on floor 9. He is pointing to the window where I missed a spot. And I work weekdays and Saturdays so I can pay the rent. And after groceries and the lottery, every dollar's spent. Every dollar's gone. Every dollar's gone. Living here in San Diego with Marie, my little girl, with her big brown eyes, her moppy little curls. She thinks that I am Superman and I don't tell her otherwise. 'Cause it's good to be Superman in her eyes. It's good to be Superman. It's good be Superman.
Oh, that was lovely. I assume that's going to show up on a new CD.
Yes.
Oh, that's really lovely. You know, you've said that you deeply believe the human spirit wants to create and be known. Elaborate on that.
I said that.
Yes, you did. I thought that was a lovely, lovely thought. And I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do. I have no doubt in my mind that every single human being is immensely creative. And I believe that fear gets in the way of that. And fear that's imposed by media culture, by war. I think fear is imposed by self. And to move beyond that and to shed layers of fear opens up absolute creativity. And I have no, when someone says to me, oh, you're an artist, I'm not that creative, I can't draw, I can't sing, I don't believe it at all.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that fear gets in the way of allowing yourself to be that creative person. The expression of it, I happen to play guitar. I don't actually even feel like a musician necessarily, but I feel like a person who wants to create. And I happen to have been born into a family, you know, where guitar mm-hmm. was an orientation that made sense. Mm-hmm. It could be a number of things, mm-hmm. you know, endless mediums is the word I'm looking for to express that creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think this is an incredible time in our culture when it's amazing that people are actually able to break through the fear.
Yeah.
And we need more people singing and creating art. And because this culture is really quite frightening right now, if you ask me.
Yes, it's absolutely frightening.
Fear is the bottom line to most of our leaders.
Yeah.
Keep
and
people
it is,
in
and
line.
I think to intentionally instill fear as a means to gain power, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of
thing. And to keep people in their place.
Yeah, to keep people in their place. And there's something that I question from... I was reading... a book by Wendell Berry, a writer and farmer in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've probably read him.
Yes.
And he was asked at one point to write a protest poem for the Vietnam War. And the poem starts, he said, this poem will not make any difference. I'm going to write it. No one's going to read it. And even if they did read it, it's not going to change anything. And the war and the machine will go on as it has, even though I've written this poem. And I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, this is getting depressing. Come on, Wendell, you know, like.
We need your words.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But then at the end, towards the end, he said, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. He said something to the effect that, but even if it's only for the sake of preserving the integrity of the soul of the person who wrote it, then that's reason enough to write it. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, jumped off the page as like, oh, sometimes I question, I travel around the country and I play music and I do my thing. And I, just as what you're talking about, in the face of that media fear machine out there as what we call our culture, I sometimes question and doubt, what the hell am I doing this for anymore?
Exactly.
And when I remember that quote, if it's just for the sake of me not crusting over and getting old, that's reason enough to do it. So just keep on, you know, that's what I, at my lowest, that's what I clutch onto, you know.
That's great.
And then hopefully there's a little bit more going on than that.
We are almost out of time. Can you give a website or something and people can
website.
Get in touch with you and
Absolutely.
Perhaps get your CD? And...
Sure, yeah, that would be great. My name and website is Joe Crookston, CROOKSTON. So joecrookston.com. And there is a way to, order CDs. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. I have CDs available and you can get them through the website.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Joe. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Tish.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.